Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Daniel Baldwin's wife is arrested in Lake Oswego. Fred Meyer employees are suing over a handsy customer. And whether you like it or not, you're going to get more Walmarts.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, steel yourselves for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, July 14th, 2011. The wife of actor Daniel Baldwin was arrested Wednesday, according to the Lake Oswego police. Joanne Claire Baldwin, 39, was arrested on a probation violation in connection with a prior conviction for driving under the influence of alcohol. Actor Daniel Baldwin moved to Portland in 2010 and started his own local production company. He is, of course, the brother of 30 Rock star Alec Baldwin and acting siblings William and Stephen Baldwin. Daniel Baldwin confirmed his wife was arrested and said, "She needs to take care of herself. She needs to focus on getting sober."
Did he rap it?
No, not this time.
Okay.
Late Wednesday night, Baldwin sent out a tweet that read, "Thanks to, number two, all of my friends on Twitter. My girls are okay, and I am here for them. They make me so strong. Please pray for Joanne. She needs God's love." L-U-V.
Okay.
Report on TMZ on Wednesday quotes Daniel Baldwin as saying his wife is frequently intoxicated, has threatened him with a knife.
Awesome.
And has physically assaulted him.
Is that in the about her section?
Yes.
"I'm frequently intoxicated. Also, I beat my husband up and menace him with a blade."
The report also states the actor obtained a restraining order, won temporary custody of their two children, and has filed for divorce.
What kind of a man is Daniel Baldwin? Honestly.
Well, he's a Baldwin. It seems like that is a very variable gene pool, the Baldwin family. You have Alec Baldwin, and then way down over on the other end, you got Stephen and Billy Baldwin, and then you got Daniel kind of floating back and forth somewhere in the middle.
I'm just saying, what kind of man allows himself to be menaced by a woman?
Oh,
I mean, really,
that.
Over and over and repeatedly. I'm not just saying once, but I'm saying just sticks around and apparently it just makes a lifestyle of it. Is she huge?
I don't know. Maybe she's just super hot.
Maybe she's intense. That's true. Well, maybe there's crazy sex involved.
Right, because there's that whole crazy hot scale. The hotter you are, the crazier you're allowed to be.
No, that makes sense. What is? Don't I know it, Don? What is her name?
Joanne Claire Clare Baldwin.
C L A R E. Joanne Claire Baldwin.
Yes.
Joanne Claire
Baldwin.
Yeah. According to something or other that was obtained by TMZ, Joanne once came into the family bedroom and said she had just watched a documentary on women who kill their husbands and said, "Now I know how to do it. I understand why they did it. You've been warned. Move out of this house or I am going to kill you." Daniel said their daughter heard the comment and asked him, "Is mommy going to kill us?"
The answer is yes. Well, I don't know how old she is, but I
hope... She's 39.
I'll see, and I was so hoping... I was going to say, I hope the answer is older than she probably is. She's got a lot of miles on her. There's this is a bit of a rugged life has had Joanne Claire Baldwin, I believe.
Well,
God damn.
It can't be easy being married to Daniel Baldwin. I'm sure he is a man of many varied needs and demands.
I suppose that's why God made annulments, though.
Yeah,
and also, you know, a car, so you can be somewhere else away from Daniel Baldwin.
And divorce attorneys.
And here's the thing. I have such mixed emotions about Daniel Baldwin, because obviously, I mean, there's much to maybe make light of or on occasion gently mock about many of the Baldwins, including Daniel. But then I'm on this whole jag of rewatching Homicide: Life on the Street, and he was really, really good on that show.
No, he's a very talented actor. He really is.
I mean,
and a lovely man on Twitter.
Perhaps
from the one time that he responded to my tweet.
It has to do. Really? Have you become that person?
Because, you know, he and I are friends now.
Ask him for a job.
We're really good friends,
uh-huh.
Daniel Baldwin and I, because he responded to me on Twitter.
Okay. I understand. No. Is this your because Portland's Brett Butler?
Yes.
All right.
Yes. I am Bizarra Dawn now.
All right.
Fred Meyer stores are being sued by employees who said a customer was sexually harassing them and the store did nothing to stop it. The plaintiffs allege a man who visited the store almost daily since 2007 would, quote, sit by the employee time clock in order to pull women onto his lap as they walked by to punch in. He would also rub up against female workers, giving unwanted hugs and groping their bodies.
Sounds like he was punching in.
Wah! The lawsuit claims managers told them nothing could be done unless a manager or loss prevention personnel witnessed the harassment. Plaintiff Laura Morrow said, "I reported this problem time and time again, and they didn't do anything to protect me." Fred Meyer spokesperson Melinda Merrill said the company's labor relations department was reviewing the case. The suit seeks an undetermined amount of monetary damage.
That's the thing. My hand slipped on the... Damn this smooth, frictionless trackpad.
And your smooth, smooth hands.
Seriously. So they're seeking money and they're seeking what? And he's an employee or he's a customer?
No, he's just a customer. He's just a guy who comes into Fred Meyer and hangs around by the time clock and then gropes the employees when they come in.
Well, you know, you got to give him points for figuring out where the foot traffic is strongest.
Yeah. They're like the bears at the waterfalls, who know, at the dam, who know that all of the tasty fish will show up.
Sussed out where the Pringles are going to be.
Yeah. The suit seeks an undetermined amount of monetary damages, training on anti-discrimination laws, and posting of notices at the work site to prevent sexual harassment.
It seems like that's not going to have anything to do with him because he doesn't work there.
No.
That's just dumb.
No.
None of those things are going to have the desired effect, I would imagine, because he's just some boob off the street.
Yeah. Also, I think some of the actual employees who work there need to learn the words, "Stop that or I'm calling the cops."
Or just how to carry mace, maybe.
Get the hell out.
Yeah. Or just how to give a guy a good stabbing. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. If you want to get this program later on the day via iTunes, you can do that. It is also available as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or LegionofNews.com. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at RickEmersonShow.com, where you can be amused for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. What might those people hear later on the day?
Don? Well, they will hear a taser watch and a penis watch.
Excellent. Taser, penis.
Let me make sure. I'll look right here and I'll tell you.
Also, I've got an amusing piece of
penis watch.
Amusing piece of audio.
Ooh, I like that.
It's a chuckle-inducing piece of sound that I'll play later on. So that's coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, where your first week is free, and where if you don't listen, we're inevitably going to talk about you behind your back. So it really is, it's to your benefit to subscribe. You can get this program, Legion of News, on your mobile device if you like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
There's not a lot to report on the ongoing debt negotiations in terms of progress, but there appears to be no shortage of anecdotes leaking to the press about how tense the conversations have become. The big takeaway from Wednesday's meeting at the White House was that President Obama, depending on who you listen to, either stormed out of the room in frustration or made a dramatic exit to accentuate his point that time was running out. Obama's speedy departure reportedly came shortly after Eric Cantor, the House's number two Republican, accused the president of originally overstating the savings his proposal would mean for the country and pushed for a short-term solution. The president responded by again threatening to veto any stopgap legislation that reaches his desk, arguing that striking a deal will only grow more difficult as the 2012 elections near. According to ABC News, Obama said, "This may bring my presidency down, but I will not yield on this. Enough is enough. We have to be willing to compromise. It shouldn't be about positioning and politics. And I'll see you all tomorrow."
In hell!
And then he left the room.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Fantastic.
Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke is trying to stay out of the specifics of the debate. But in a testimony to Congress, Bernanke says they have to consider the effects of any cuts.
Now, is this debt one?
Yes.
We do need to take some care that we don't, by excessive restriction in the short term, that we don't hamper what is already a very slow recovery.
He acknowledges to Congress that it didn't fix a troubled economy.
When we began this program, we certainly did not expect it to be a panacea for the country's economic problems. However, as the expansion weakened last summer, developments with respect to both components of our dual mandate implied that additional monetary accommodation was needed.
I admire anyone who uses the word panacea, though.
Sounds like a drug.
I was going to actually, I was thinking at one point I wanted to open my own bakery, and I was going to call it Panacea.
You don't want to do that. It looks like placenta.
Originally, I wanted to call it Bread and Circuses, and then I found out there was already a bakery someplace called that.
No, and that seems like a place people are going to bring their children to. Mm. You know what Obama should do? He should just show up in, like, full-on, like, 300, like, Sparta gear. And just, you know, and then kind of curl his fist and look it upward at the sky. And I shall not yield.
This will not stand.
If I were Obama, and I'm not, if I were, if I'm just saying, if this is up to me, I don't know why he doesn't just do a thing of like putting him and Eric Cantor in a room with the cameras on, and then the cameras just stay on, and it's just a battle of wills.
Just a staring contest.
Seriously, and they just sit in a room for as long as it takes. You know, there's no bathroom breaks, no liquids of any kind. They just sit there and they just stare at each other across the table until one of them gives up.
Oh, and you know Obama could take him.
Totally.
Yeah.
No, and Cantor's a pussy.
Yeah.
I can tell.
Wednesday's drama followed a testy exchange the day before between Obama and Cantor, who appears to have replaced House Speaker John Boehner as the president's foil. According to a story in the Washington Post, after Cantor pushed the president for a paper with more details on the grand bargain he was pushing for, Obama responded, "Frankly, your speaker has it. Am I dealing with him or am I dealing with you?"
Yeah, that's right.
Congressional leaders are set to return to the White House this afternoon for another round of negotiations. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi says the fact that President Obama is coming to the table daily shows that he wants to make a deal.
All right, then.
That would be Pelosi one.
Oh, I'm sorry. You weren't just like, I thought you were like jabbing your pen sort of to make a point.
I was gesturing at you.
You were gesturing. I thought you were punctuating
with a
strong sort of, all right.
Job is no place compared to this president in terms of patience. He doesn't even begin.
Never heard of a hobbit.
This president has demonstrated a level of patience.
It's a mouthful of Christian babies.
And day out, the president has respectfully listened.
I'm Martha Ray.
Eric Cantor complained last night that President Obama walked out on the meeting to discuss raising the debt ceiling. Pelosi says she doesn't understand the fuss.
I just don't understand what the problem is if the President of the United States, who's had a meeting for over 2 hours, stands up and says, "See you tomorrow." That's how meetings with presidents end. You don't leave first. The president leaves first.
Should be sort of a, Obama should end it with like a your mama joke. You know, your mama's so broke, she on clearance.
I think he should just sigh and roll his eyes and go, "You know, I got crap to do."
Yeah, and also I'm president, and you're not, so I will inevitably win. Do I not get credit for an on the fly your mama joke?
A yo mama joke
that was topical.
It was.
I'm just saying
that
was an ad hoc bit of humor I came up with just there.
Congratulations, sir.
Whatever.
Well done.
Here's Don Taylor.
That's why you're a professional.
Uh-huh.
A Walmart spokeswoman confirmed the retailing giant has plans to build two grocery stores inside of existing but empty stores in Lake Oswego and West Lynn. One is the former Nature's at 17711 Gene Way in Lake Oswego. And that's interesting. It's a building Patrick and I were living in. When we were living in Tualatin, we used to go by there all the time and always wondered, like, what the hell was going to happen to this building? Because it's been empty, I think, for 5 years.
The answer is always a Walmart.
Yeah, and it's huge. It's a great big grocery store building. I mean, there's only so many things that can go into a place like that.
They should start building Walmarts inside of other Walmarts.
They
just
should.
To really underscore the point.
The other is the former Bales Marketplace on Willamette Drive in West Lynn. Tiffany Moffat, who I guess is the person from Walmart, said, "We're really excited about it."
Okay. Yeah. That's the kind of enthusiasm only Walmart can muster.
She said the company has not finalized plans for the stores and could offer no details on what they'll look like or when they'll be opened. But she made it clear the plans are moving forward. They need affordable grocery. She said,
is she
referring
suddenly
to
Asian?
Lake Oswego and West Lynn.
Okay. Is it? What does she mean? She doesn't know what they're going to look like. They're going to look like Walmart.
Yeah, I know. They're going to be big square buildings with a Walmart name on the side.
It's just going to be a building that smells like uncooked bread and is filled with spongy people.
But yeah, they really do need affordable groceries in Lake Oswego.
Well,
where the rich people live.
You know, rich people can be tightwads as well.
Daniel Baldwin is wishing he could get, like, a break on his cat food.
How do you think it is that they became rich, Don? Is it by paying a lot of markup? I don't think so.
Some shoppers in Lake Oswego welcome the Walmart grocery stores. Woman on the street, Nancy Petrie, said, "The prices are pretty amazing on the groceries. I think it's a great thing."
That really is true. By the way, I can testify to that. She's correct about that. We've had this discussion. Walmart is absurdly... It's so cheap it actually doesn't make sense. You almost feel that things are mislabeled when you go to a Walmart. I'm not wearing it now, but I was wearing a shirt this morning. I have this whole filing system for black T-shirts. But I have this one row of black T-shirts that are... that I don't really wear, you know, that I sort of wear around the house. Or if it's the ones that I can sort of, like, if I'm going to be doing something where they might get stained or torn or something. Like if I'm going to be out working on my automobile in the street.
Right. If you're fixing the plumbing down in the basement.
That's right, to attract the ladies. I'll wear these shirts from Walmart because I swear to God, they're like $1.99. I mean, it's unbelievable. It is, for all intents and purposes, the same shirt that American Apparel charges me $24.99 for. So, I mean, that is the thing where... You can snark all they want, but I mean, that is a thing that really one cannot argue with. The idea that Walmart is, like, mind-breakingly cheap.
Well, a man on the street, Brent Leonard in West Lynn, said he welcomes a Walmart grocery store. He said he's visited similar stores in Utah, and he said, "It's a small grocery store. Local produce. They cater to the community, to the city, kind of the surrounding residents. We've enjoyed visiting those, and I'd like to have something like that up here."
Is he still talking about Walmart?
Apparently so. I think he may have been in somewhere else.
Yeah, I think he may not know how to read.
No.
That's just a guess.
I think he's on. And then there's also a woman who owns a hair salon next to the vacant store, which is called Hairport. And she admits that walk-in traffic did slow with the economy and with the closing of the Bales grocery store. So she's kind of excited to hear Walmart is coming in because then, hey... people be buying those cheap T-shirts, and then need haircuts.
Does Walmart sell produce or anything fresh in any way?
I have only ever been in a Walmart twice in my entire life, so I
You really ought to
I
go more often.
Know.
Now, the thing about going to Walmart is it's a healthy place to go about every 3 months because it just centers you. It just, it gives you a sense of relativism.
Like riding the bus or going to the laundromat where it makes you feel good about your life?
It's not even that. See, that's the thing. Is like I think that is the reflexive response is to say that you'll feel much better about your life. And that probably is true. But regardless of where one is on the social spectrum, the example I always use is that they'll tell you if you have, like, a cell phone or a laptop or something, like, every now and again, like, every 90 days, you got to let the battery just run all the way down till where your computer just goes dead, and then charge it all the way back up again so that the battery is able to judge itself accurately. Because if you're constantly just charging it when it's not empty, eventually the battery doesn't know what empty is, and it starts to say, like, 80% power when it's dead and 20% power when it's full. You got to drain it and then charge it all the way up so that the reading is accurate and it knows exactly what's what. You got to go to Walmart every now and again just to get a sense of where you are in the universe.
I have to admit, I did feel very good when I went to Kmart a few months ago and bought $5 Joe Boxer pajama pants.
That's what I'm saying.
So, you can't feel good about that sort of thing.
No, I won't. The thing is, like, I think everybody has a just sort of sense of, everybody has a list of personal attributes or values, and then it's just a question of what trumps what eventually. And all of my sort of, my rapier sharp wit, that is all just blunted by the idea that I can buy 10 of something for like a dollar. I don't even care what it is. If it's a thing I don't even really want. What is this? Well, they're socks with ponies on them and they make noise when you walk. Great. How much are they? 10 for a dollar. I'm sold. And you just put them in the cart. It doesn't even really matter. It's just the idea that they're so mind-bogglingly inexpensive.
You know, that's how the hoarder people get started.
It is. No, that's... Well, that's and when we say hoarder people, we really mean me. I mean, that's kind of the deal.
I've never been in your home, so I have no idea if it's one of those places that you have to, like, climb over things to get in the front door.
No, it's not, but it will be someday. I'm aware of that fact. Okay. Like, I'm able to. I try to keep it.
I don't think Laura will allow that, considering that things like your womb stretch a T-shirt have started disappearing.
No, but here's the thing is that she actually keeps way more stuff than I do. I, every now and again, I just go on this purge where I try to get rid of everything I own and just try to get it down to, like, a very Spartan existence, and that's because I'm aware of my own. I am aware of my own internal workings, you know, in a sort of psychological sense. And I know that if I don't do that occasionally, I am going to be like a 70-year-old guy, and I'm just going to be surrounded by National Geographics to the ceiling and, like, empty boxes of zingers. So every now and again, as, like, a sort of, it's like the little hole at the top of your sink that keeps it from overflowing. Every now and again, I just do sort of a, and I just, you know, expunge everything from my home.
And you know this about yourself, and that's good. And knowing, half the battle.
74% of the battle, yeah. Actually.
A new report from the Pew Hispanic Center indicates 16.3% of all Americans are of Hispanic origin. That compares with about 12.5% being African American and less than 10% Asian American. The center's associate director, Mark Hugo Lopez, I'm already starting to suspect this data, considering Mark Hugo Lopez. He says the country's Hispanic.
Are you implying he can't count?
No, I'm just saying that he has something invested in telling us that we're becoming more and more Hispanic.
What do you suppose he has invested in that? What is the possible benefit to him?
He wants us to bow down to our future Hispanic overlords.
Okay, well, done and done.
Yeah. He says the country's Hispanic population will only continue to grow.
Let's see.
So Hispanics are now the nation's largest minority group, and moving forward.
He doesn't sound like a real Hispanic person.
He sounds a little bit like William
Borucki?
William Borucki.
Hold on.
I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates. We have over 700. We believe about half of those will probably turn out to be planets.
So Hispanics are now the nation's largest minority.
He's William Borucki's much more smooth-talking older brother.
Yes.
Like a socially adept sibling.
So yeah. Hispanics are now the nation's largest minority group. And
they're huge.
And moving forward, Hispanic population growth, we project, will be more rapid than it is for the U.S. overall, and that by 2050, Hispanics will account for nearly 3 in 10 of all Americans.
Does he have, like, a PowerPoint presentation that just shows that my home is eventually going to be filled with Hispanics, whether I want it or not?
And meanwhile, Aaron Duran is just doing a dance somewhere.
Just chuckling with glee at the fall of...
rubbing his hands together.
Whitey's empire crumbling.
Lopez says they've also noticed a new trend.
One of the things that's happened in the last decade is that population growth among Hispanics, which there was a lot of growth in the last decade, was more attributable to birth than to new immigrant arrivals. And that's actually a departure from previous decades.
Hispanics be breeding, Don.
Oh, okay.
Just FYI.
Yeah. Right. They do like to have children.
It's true. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. You can get this program later on the day via iTunes if you like, or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
An alligator bit a 7-year-old boy at a theme park in northwest Indiana over the weekend.
Was the theme pain?
It was.
Okay.
It's the Park of Pain. After a visitor fished the reptile out of its habitat and invited children to pet it. Ryan Strand of Concord, North Carolina, was bitten by the alligator on Sunday evening at the Zao Island Family Entertainment Center and Amusement Park. He was treated at the scene by emergency medical services, then taken to the hospital by his mother for additional care on his right index finger. Katie Hurst, a manager at the venue, called police immediately after the incident at 6:45 p.m. At the indoor-outdoor amusement venue, alligators are kept in an outdoor pond surrounded by a fence along U.S. Route 30. Visitors can feed them hot dog chunks by dangling them from string attached to provided poles. Hurst told police a man fashioned a noose out of one of the strings and used it to fish an alligator out of the enclosure. He then invited nearby children to pet it.
Goddamn, people are stupid.
When it bit Ryan, the man put the alligator back into the exhibit and drove away in a dark-colored extended cab pickup.
Well, what's he supposed to do? Stay around? I don't think there's alligators there.
The Zao Island employee was able to identify the woman as a 24-year-old Portage, Indiana resident, but police said she was uncooperative. Police said she would not answer her phone until a relative still at Zao Island encouraged her to do so. When she did speak to police, she would not provide the man's name. The theme park also provides miniature golf, batting cages, rides, and arcade games.
Well, so there's
in addition to feeding hot dogs to gators.
Because that's what you want to do is train. I mean, in case there's any doubt among you know, the alligator community that you can get food from humans in any number of ways, you want to reinforce that knowledge. Okay, that's great.
Hey, I love the idea. You kids want to pet the gator?
The idea that it's just sort of a, ooh, went poorly, yoink, into the van, and just speeding away into
run
the
away!
Night, which is exactly what I would do.
Yes. The Transportation Security Administration reports the nation's airports have suffered more than 25,000 security breaches since November 2001. Congressman Jason Chaffetz says it won't be easy to overcome this problem.
I think one of the personal challenges that we have as a nation is how do we become more secure and yet less invasive? That we don't give up every personal liberty in the name of security. And we have to find that proper balance. It's a difficult one, knowing that the threat is real.
Chaffetz says much more needs to be done to protect Americans against potential terrorists.
A lot of what we have been participating here, in my personal opinion, has been security theater and has not truly done the job to secure the airports to the degree that we need to.
Clearly, more anal inspections are called for.
I think so.
I'm just saying.
You know, that would make me want to travel.
I mean, really, if it were up to me. Yeah.
Rupert Murdoch is refusing to testify before the British Parliament about the alleged phone hacking among employees of his sprawling media conglomerate, News Corp. A parliamentary committee had summoned the news tycoon to appear on July 19th to give evidence, but in a letter sent Thursday to John Whittingdale, the head of the government panel overseeing British media, Murdoch gave a polite but firm refusal. He wrote, "Unfortunately, I am not available to attend the session you have planned next Tuesday," although he added he would be willing to appear before a judge in a separate inquiry that Prime Minister David Cameron announced on Wednesday. Murdoch's son, James Murdoch, who oversees the European division of News Corp, was also asked to appear. He joined his father in refusing the summons, but he also offered to appear on August 10th or 11th. It's unclear what power the British government has to compel the two men to testify, since they are American citizens. Sir George Young, the leader of the House of Commons, indicated that the British government may be able to impose legal penalties on the Murdochs if they're found to be in contempt of Parliament. Nevertheless, Young made clear that these kinds of sanctions hadn't been imposed for a long time. He said, "If a witness fails to attend when summoned, the committee reports the matter to the House, and it's then for the House to decide what further action to take. There hasn't been a case of that kind for some considerable time. The House can order a witness to attend a committee, but apparently this hasn't happened since 1920.
I didn't know he was an American citizen.
Yes.
So he's from Australia, he lives in Britain, but he's an American citizen.
Yeah, okay. He's crafty.
He really is just, I think it's just a sport for him. It's just so he can flout the laws of three continents simultaneously.
U.S. Lawmakers are calling on the Justice Department to investigate the tactics at Murdoch's publications. Congressman Bruce Braley, who wrote a letter to the chair of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, calls the accusations egregious.
Everything we're hearing about this growing problem is that it involves reprehensible conduct by people who are trained to follow a journalistic code of ethics that I learned in journalism school right after Watergate.
Whatever.
Braley questions Murdoch's business ethics.
Is this the type of...
Really? Is that the best he can do? That he has reason to believe that Rupert Murdoch's business ethics might not be, like, ironclad?
That's shocking.
He might occasionally color outside the lines of propriety.
Is this the type of behavior we can expect from your businesses?
Always.
A U.S. business involved in foreign practices that could be in violation of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act.
Really, he's the man who gave America the television program Studs.
Yeah.
I mean, what is it you're expecting from him exactly?
Meanwhile, West Virginia Democratic Senator Jay Rockefeller is calling into investigation into whether Americans may be victims of the phone hacking scandal. Rockefeller says it must be determined if Rupert Murdoch's media empire went too far in the U.S.
Let's see. What is
hacking?
So I think I have two sets of cuts. They're both called hacking. So this is the... Let me just get...
This is one and two.
This is the next center.
Everything we're hearing about
wait,
this...
fail. That's wrong. Let me try these. Let me try the other set of cuts that says hacking.
This is a... It's really repugnant, you know, that one man can control so many.
Rockefeller says a Rockefeller is saying this, by the
it's
way.
It's repugnant, Don.
That one man
I won't
has,
have
so,
it.
Has so much money and power.
Exactly.
Says Jay Rockefeller. He says he wants to get to the bottom of this.
You know that the Department of Justice and all kinds of other federal agencies are going to be going after this very hard, and we will too.
He sounds like, what is it, the colonel from Boogie Nights. is that...
You know that the Department of Justice and all kinds...
That's just me. I like butter in my ass and lollipops in my mouth. Call me crazy. Call me a pervert. I just like to use that phrase every now and again. Well. I don't know why. And so forth. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, coming up later on this hour, entertainment news. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program featuring a taser watch, penis watch, an amusing piece of oral comedy. And I have this top five that I may or may not do, so it's all put together. But it's the one that I was going to do on, Monday, I guess, when Ryan White was here. Were you here Monday?
No.
Okay, so it was the day, when it was... Was it Eric Snyder? Yeah. So it was Monday that I put this together, thinking that I would have Ryan White weigh in on it. But I may just do it today. It's the top five that I've assembled that's been sitting there, gathering dust, just collecting.
But it will still be fresh for the people.
That's true. That's what I'm saying. So it's if they haven't heard it's new to them, Don.
Put a little damp paper towel over it, put it in the microwave, and it'll freshen right up.
See, that's what I'm saying. See, now you're finally coming around. The idea that it's been sitting there for, any number of days, moldering away, if they haven't heard it, it might as well be new.
That's true.
That's exactly what it is. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
It's time for science.
Here's your science on the march. We should get a science jingle. Like the picture pages jingle or something.
Okay.
Or like or that jingle that Alex had for Vizo for like a day and a half with the ukulele chicks.
Okay.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. This is your Science in the March brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them at SquiresElectric.com or you can go to Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. While you're there, please hit the like button if you would. And they'll do that, by the way, without requiring a kidney in any way. You can have that whole deal going on there. They'll come to your house. They'll come to your home. They'll come to your home business and make sure that everything is working properly. If you've got issues, if you've got quandaries, if you've got conundrums, they can make sure that everything is working, that everything is upgraded, repaired, installed, and put right. If you've got any sort of issue happening, you got the air conditioner, you want to plug it in, but you're afraid it's just going to fry the entire joint, or if we get into the end of summer and then fall and then winter, make sure that all the wiring is in tip-top condition, that you're going to be able to pass any upcoming inspections. If you're going to be moving from one building to other, you can make sure that everything is working the first day you move on in. They are Squires Electric. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. Proud sponsors of this, Legion of News and your Science on the March.
In order to salvage what's left of our dying bee population, scientists are working on breeding a better honeybee, a super bee, if you will, that is resistant to pests and viruses and impervious to cold. Colony collapse disorder first appeared in 2006, but while the North American honeybee population has dropped precipitously recently, one beekeeper told Fast Company magazine that his 2010 honey crop was the smallest in 35 years of beekeeping. Honeybee populations had been declining for decades due to insecticide-resistant mites and viruses. Instead of trying new insecticides, researchers are trying a different approach. Breeding stronger bees.
It could only end badly.
Viruses and mites have, according to the UN, killed 85% of bees in the Middle East, 10% to 30% of bees in Europe, and nearly a third of American bees each year. This is a big deal. Over 70 of the 100 crops that provide 90% of the world's food are pollinated by bees.
So instead we're going to be eating food created by mutant, genetically altered bees.
Super
that
bees.
Seems like a great idea.
So researchers at the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg have started to ship queen bees from hives that exhibit some resistance to mites across Canada, where they are exposed to, quote, disease pressure, unquote. Each generation of survivors is bred for the next season, the theory being that eventually a mite-resistant brand of bees will emerge.
Well, it seems like that would just happen anyway. It's called natural selection.
Well, I think they're just boosting natural selection.
We shouldn't be allowed to try to fix anything. We should never be allowed to try to remedy any sort of situation that we ourselves have created. That should be a new law.
Well, the super bees not only withstand mites, but they better withstand winters compared to their regular counterparts. Only 46% of European honeybees normally survive the winter, but the super bees have a 75% survival rate. Mite-resistant bees are probably not the panacea. Panacea! Twice in one day to our bee crisis, because while mites and viruses certainly contribute to our bee problems, they don't tell the whole story. Pesticides, climate change, and even cell phone use are all suspected as possible culprits.
Oh, honestly, what isn't cell phone use accused of doing?
So, but on the other hand, though, we're going to have super bees.
All right. I mean, that just... It just seems like it's some sort of horrible... it seems like it's going to be like that royal jelly story from Roald Dahl, where I'm going to come into work one day and you're just going to have like 12 eyes and just be buzzing away behind the microphone.
Well, yeah, what's going to happen is the Africanized honeybee or the X-Files honeybees that have smallpox or something are going to breed with the super bees,
yes.
And we're never going to get rid of them.
No.
The Space Shuttle Atlantis crew got an early start on Thursday, which would be today. They were awakened with this message from Michael Stipe, lead singer of R.E.M.
If you believed, they put a man on the moon, man on the moon. If you believed, there's nothing up my sleeve, then nothing is cool.
Good morning, Atlantis. This is Michael Stipe from REM.
Your new god.
We wish you much success on your mission and thank all of the women and men at NASA who have worked on shuttle for 3 decades. From Earth, a very good morning to you.
Okay, that's pretty awesome, actually. Yeah. I was all prepared to be snarky because it's Michael Stipe, but that's actually pretty great. I can't bust on that.
And then they revealed that one of the astronauts on the shuttle, Andy Kaufman. Scientists have filmed and studied the gaits of three-legged dogs in a bid to develop robot-building strategies. The researchers want to find out how three-legged dogs compensate for the loss of a limb. They hope ultimately to develop robots that could compensate similarly. The scientists filmed the dogs from several angles with high-speed cameras as they ran on treadmills.
Is it just called hopping?
No, it's a little bit more complicated than that. If you've ever watched a three-legged dog run, because their front two legs are running, and then the back leg has to do its thing, and it's odd. It's odd and it's different. They're running with two legs and hopping with one all at the same time. In the study, they did this at they presented the research at the Society for Experimental Biology annual meeting in Prague. There's a Society for Experimental Biology.
Well, how else are you going to get Hitler's brain to come back to life?
I'll bet they have something to do with the super bees,
yes,
too. In the study, dogs that had already lost either a forelimb or a hind limb through an accident or injury ran on a treadmill for 2 minutes. The researchers filmed the dogs with a set of 10 high-speed infrared cameras. They also placed several reflective markers on the dog's skin, which allowed them to trace the movements of different parts of the animal's bodies. Martin Gross of the University of Jena in Germany led the study, which is part of an EU project called Locomorph.
What is the application of this knowledge?
I think they want basically when you have robots, right now they can do robots that can do all kinds of things on a flat, even surface. But they want robots that will be able to figure out how to compensate for uneven terrain and unexpected stuff.
Here's how I know that's not true, because that robot already exists. There's YouTube footage of it. We've done stories about this. They have that robot that can't be knocked over.
Yeah, but also what happens if that robot loses one of its limbs?
Well, it seems like if the robot can adjust for sudden differences in height, it doesn't know what the difference in height is caused by. Well, it could be because there's a pothole, could be because its foot is gone.
Well, they're just trying to teach the robots, like, basically, I think, how to adapt if something happens to it. It's the same way they're teaching the robots how to lie. They're basically trying to teach the robots how to, like, scheme.
So they can breed with the bees.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
Dr. Gross said that he has a brother who has a three-legged dog, and that inspired him to use dogs in his biomechanics research. He said, the one with only three legs is still the fastest of all of his dogs. The dogs found adjusting to missing a forelimb more difficult than missing a hind limb. The scientists say this is because more of the animal's body weight is borne on the front. Dr. Gross and his team have already developed some small quadrupedal robots, and this study to develop ways for the robots to manage if they are injured will continue for the next 2 years.
I bet they're adorable. I bet if they're tiny little miniature dog robots that are like the size of a thimble, that'd be fantastic.
Yes.
I'd buy a fleet of those.
Would you? And a little three-legged dog robot just would be just like even more.
Having
adorable.
Them running around the studio all
right.
day.
Scientists are reporting development of a new approach for producing large quantities of human-derived gelatin that could become a substitute for some of the 300,000 tons of animal-based gelatin produced annually for gelatin-type desserts, marshmallows, candy, and innumerable other projects.
I think Jeffrey Dahmer sussed that out like 20 years ago.
The study appears in the American Chemical Society's Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. Jinshun Chen and his colleagues explained that animal-based gelatin, which is made most often from the bones and skin of cows and pigs, may carry a risk of infectious diseases such as mad cow disease and could provoke immune system responses in some people. Animal-based gelatin has other drawbacks, with variability from batch to batch, creating difficulties for manufacturers. Scientists thus have sought alternatives, including development of a human recombinant gelatin for potential use in drug capsules and other medical applications.
I think the drawback of human-derived gelatin is it's derived from humans.
Yes.
That really seems to be a deal-breaker.
I'm not sure, like, where they're getting it from is my problem. They said They developed and demonstrated a method where human gelatin genes are inserted into a strain of yeast.
I don't want this.
Which can produce gelatin with controllable features.
Is that so like you can make it look like your high school girlfriend? Hello.
They're still testing the human yeast gelatin to see how well it compares.
I don't want human yeast gelatin. For the love of God. No one wants human yeast gelatin. No one anywhere. There's no one who wants this.
They suggest their method could be scaled up to produce large amounts.
I don't want a small amount. I don't want a large amount. I don't want it for commercial use, farm-based use, industrial use. I don't want it as a spackle or a grout. I don't want Jell-O made from people. No one wants that. Attention, all scientists everywhere. No, mustn't. Bad scientists. Bad. Stop. Mummy will smack. Jesus. No, 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 no. All right. Could we be done now?
Yeah, we're done with the science.
Jesus, God. There's your utterly revolting and stomach-turning Science in the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. God damn, for the love of Christ Almighty. All right. Don't forget, coming up later on this hour, your entertainment news, also the Rick Emerson radio program coming up in next hour at rickemersonshow.com. But we're not going to be talking about gelatin derived from human beings.
No.
Because it's just a guy coming by your house and just stealing a big bag of fingernails out of your trash.
Kind of, yeah.
I mean, that's all. Yeah. Jesus. All right.
A Delray Beach, Florida man was arrested Wednesday after police say they found him aimlessly firing a gun in front of his home. Police responded about 6:30 p.m. to Brian Garahan's residence in a neighborhood of single-family homes. An officer saw Garahan, 37, indiscriminately firing off shots in front of his home. This according to Delray Beach Police Sergeant Nicole Guerrero. No one was struck or injured by the gunfire, Guerrero said. When the officer arrived, Garahan went into the house, opened a window, and continued to shoot the gun through it. Police set up a perimeter around the residence and called for the SWAT unit, but Garahan surrendered before the SWAT unit arrived.
Ah, damn.
It was not immediately clear Wednesday what type of gun he was using or whether he struck anything. He was taken to City Police Department and scheduled to be booked into Palm Beach County Jail last night. He was expected to be charged with discharging a firearm in a public place, but it was private property. Is it still a public place?
No. Well, the bullet doesn't stay in his property,
true.
I would imagine.
And could face additional charges pending the outcome of the investigation. Garahan may have had a fight with his girlfriend, who was not home when the incident took place.
He may also be crazy. Yeah. He may also need to be put down.
Might be a little bit nuts.
You know, FYI.
A Kaiser, Oregon man will spend nearly 6 years in prison for allegedly stabbing his ex-girlfriend at a parade. Mario Gutierrez pleaded guilty Wednesday on charges of assault and unlawful use of a weapon.
Seems like it's gone past alleged.
Yeah. Police said Gutierrez attacked his ex-girlfriend during Kaiser's Iris Festival parade in May. They say it happened when the woman was holding a young child. Gutierrez also punched the young child in the face.
Their Irish parade?
The Iris.
Kiss me, I'm Iris.
The Iris Festival.
What is the Iris Festival?
It's when all of the irises are in bloom and they celebrate the iris.
I was thinking it was like an optometry fest.
Kaiser, which is down south of us, they grow a lot of irises there.
Okay.
And
all
in
right.
the springtime, they bloom.
And he just hates them.
And he hates them.
Like a plague.
And apparently he hates the joy of small children.
Well, he's not alone there.
So he's not going to be allowed any early release from his sentence, they said, because of the stabbing and the punching and the whatnot.
And the Mohegan.
Yeah. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is in the process of writing rules to protect manatees, the sea cows, who occasionally get lost and dominate media coverage for weeks from boating and other activities that constantly kill them in Florida. So is the local Tea Party chapter in Florida okay with this? No. No, they're not. Boaters in Kings Bay, which was featured in Jacques Cousteau's manatee documentary, Forgotten Mermaids, have killed 13 manatees over the last decade with their aquatic death machines. The Fish and Wildlife Service is trying to pass permanent rules protecting Kings Bay as a refuge. They said, for instance, federal officials can establish temporary no-entry areas lasting up to 2 weeks if a cold front hits before the manatee season begins or after the manatee season has closed to prevent manatees from being harassed in Kings Bay. They're accepting public comments on the proposal through August 22nd. Edna Matos, 63, leader of the Citrus County Tea Party Patriots, said in an interview, We cannot elevate nature above people. That's against the Bible and the Bill of Rights. We believe that federal regulators' aim is to control the fish and wildlife, in addition to the use of the land that surrounds the area and the people that live here and visit. As most of us know, this all ties into the United Nations Agenda 21 and sustainability.
By which she means Jews.
Says Edna.
Yes.
Agenda 21 is a program adopted by the UN in 1992 to encourage countries around the world to promote only development that does not harm nature.
Here's the thing. Like, this may really be the Tea Party's Waterloo, because it's not like the spotted owl or like the banana slug or like the, you know, the motility of unpreserved bull semen or something.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody loves manatees, with the possible exception of Edna Schlarp or whatever her name is in Florida. So, I mean, really, I think if the Tea Party decides to take up any sort of even figurative arms against manatees, that will be their undoing, because America won't tolerate that.
No.
I would say humans won't tolerate anybody that is... Because all you do is you just put a picture of a manatee, which, let's be honest, everybody calls them sea cows, but that's not what we think. We look at them and we just see big sea dogs.
Yeah.
That's what they look. They look like big, dumb, lovable dogs that live underwater.
They're kind of like walruses, only not as whiskery, and they just seem really kind.
And just sort of, I'm not that bright, but I'm lovable.
Please don't kill me with your boat propeller.
With your what did you call it? With an aquatic death machine?
and the thing is, and this is another one of those cases where the crazy Tea Party people, all weird reactionary conservative people who think that the UN is, yes, some kind of, you know, cabal of Jews that are trying to control mankind. Agenda 21, it's a thing, encouraging countries to promote only development that doesn't harm nature. Glenn Beck and other conservatives have attacked it as an attempt to impose world government rules on American lives. The Citrus County Tea Party Group's website says Agenda 21 is, quote, designed to make humans into livestock.
Fantastic.
Maddow said she enjoys showing off the manatees to her grandchildren when they visit, but she had little use for the Save the Manatee Club, explaining, if some of these... Now, listen to the statement and see if you can find any flaw in her logic here.
Okay.
If some of these environmental movements had been around in the days of the dinosaurs, we'd be living in Jurassic Park now.
Well, there's many dozens and dozens of flaws there, I think.
Mm.
And somebody here asks a valid question, which is... This isn't an actual law, though. Like, this doesn't sound like it. This sounds like a thing that somebody at the UN said was a good idea, which doesn't really mean that anybody obeys it or follows
right.
it. The UN says genocide's probably a bad idea, but it doesn't keep people from doing it.
And then the Fish and Wildlife Service is in the process of writing rules to help protect the manatees that would basically establish temporary no-entry areas in this particular bay so that the manatees, you know, won't be endangered in certain situations. And so these Tea Party people are like, you know, how dare you tell us that we can't sail our boats around and hurt the manatees? But I also like the thing that apparently we're not allowed to protect the manatees because that's elevating them above humans, and that's against the Bible.
I also suspect that she herself is probably a no-entry area, if you know what I mean. Hey, now. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Although I have to say that I would be perversely amused if Glenn Beck came out like virulently opposed to manatees. Like if he just came out on like a kill all manatees platform and just had sort of like an over his shoulder icon of manatee, humanity's greatest threat. And then just
with a big Bar Nelson over its face.
Yeah, but a manatee with like a huge open mouth and gigantic slavering fangs.
Red eyes.
Just bloodlust, you know, and just they've all got to be killed. All manatees. That would actually be sort of great. Whereas this woman just seems like a whore.
Yeah.
You're listening to Cascadia.fm, the Rick Emerson radio program, where I'll call other people whores. It's happening next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment. For Thursday, July 14th.
Rapper/reality star Vanilla Ice has divorced Laura Giardina, his wife of 14 years. Online reports are speculating that she committed adultery, and although she's denied the rumors, she did confirm that they are no longer a couple. She told the National Enquirer, "We've had problems for a very long time, and Rob has moved out." The pair have two daughters, 12-year-old Dusty Rain and 10-year-old Keely Breeze.
Are they named after wine coolers?
God.
Space Wind is their other daughter.
27-year-old actress Olivia Wilde of House and Tron Legacy believes her divorce from Tubby Rospoli has helped her career. Her husband's name was Tubby Rospoli.
Really? Until he sends three fingers of Vincenzi over to a...
She said of her divorce, she was being interviewed by Marie Claire, "It makes you a more empathetic person, and I think it's made me a better actress."
Uh-huh.
"Weakness is something we don't like to admit we have. We hold it against people until we experience it, and then we feel more compassion for it." So being divorced has made Olivia Wilde a better actress.
Okay.
In things like Tron Legacy.
Yes.
So there you go.
To whatever extent that's possible.
Yeah. Bette Midler has dropped out of HBO's Phil Spector biopic after she suffered a herniated disc. She had been playing Linda Kenny Baden, one of Spector's lawyers, and now her part will be recast. The project is directed by David Mamet, and it features Al Pacino as Phil Spector and Jeffrey Tambor as defense attorney Bruce Cutler.
Wait a minute, so is this a made-for-HBO thing you said?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. You know, I gotta tell you, made-for-HBO, not even biopics, but like docudramas or whatever they're called, are like hands down the single best. The HBO makes the single greatest crop of dramatized documentaries that you can watch anywhere. I mean, they're fantastic, all of them.
Speaking of which, I was going to mention, if I can find this really quick.
Is this about hot coffee?
No, this is actually, speaking of HBO, this is about Todd Haynes' Mildred Pierce thing. They're actually going to be showing it here in town somewhere in one big batch.
What are we talking about?
The Mildred Pierce adaptation with Kate Winslet.
That, I have no idea what we're talking about.
Todd Haynes directed for HBO. You didn't know about that?
I'm doing the Homer Simpson slow blink over here.
Yes, it won awards and things, and it was really, really good.
I wouldn't know because I'm a knuckle-dragging rube.
Anyway, yes, if you missed it on HBO, the Northwest Film Center, Rick Emerson, since you seem to have missed it, is screening the entirety of Todd Haynes' Mildred Pierce remake.
Who is Mildred Pierce?
Well, Mildred Pierce was a novel.
Ah, okay.
And it was originally a movie starring Joan Crawford. And it's about it's kind of a weird, weepy sort of a melodrama about this woman who her husband leaves her, and she has this horrible, horrible, horrible daughter that doesn't appreciate her, and she starts these pie restaurants, and it was actually
I'm gonna go camp out right now with a sleeping bag.
The novel was written by James M. Cain, who wrote The Postman Always.
Twice. Don't get me wrong. It's at the top of my to-do list.
Anyway, but if you missed it and you're interested, you live here in Portland, it's going to be at the Northwest Film Center on July 23rd. Anyway, Paul Rudd will star in director Errol Morris's untitled film, which is based on the memoir We Froze the First Man by Robert F. Nelson. The story, which is Morris's first non-documentary project since the 1991 movie Dark Wind, centers on the first man to undergo cryogenic preservation.
Awesome.
The story was featured on This American Life under the title Your Cold as Ice and will be produced by Ira Glass.
Fantastic. I got to tell you, I love Errol Morris. His movies are fantastic. I mean, hands down. He's another guy that just makes one great movie after another, after another, after another.
He's got this weird thing,
crazy,
though, going on. I just saw a commercial for yesterday that if you go, I think it's entirely online, but it's a 10-part, mini web documentary about IBM.
Really?
That is produced by IBM and is on their website, and it was they hired Errol Morris to direct.
Is that available
it.
Now?
Yeah, it's online someplace.
Want?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to be watching that tonight, FYI, everybody. So just in case anybody wants to know if I'll be available tonight, I won't. I'll be at home watching a 10-part IBM documentary because I'm that guy. He did Gates of Heaven, right?
Yes.
Gates of Heaven, which is a documentary about a family that runs a pet cemetery, which is just... Which doesn't sound like it would be all that interesting, but it is, and it's not even because of they run a pet cemetery. That's sort of incidental. It's just that he happened to catch the inner workings and the family dynamic of just a really strange and completely, I mean, the word dysfunctional is so overused, but it's just a family where nobody quite clicks or gels with anybody else, and everyone seems to have a bunch of weird, strange, sort of convoluted emotional tumult happening beneath the surface. And just as a sort of a side note, they also run as their family business this pet cemetery. It's called Gates of Heaven, and it's on DVD, and I strongly recommend that. And he also did The Thin Blue Line, and he did Mr. Death.
Okay, this is what this is. Apparently, in the late 90s, Errol Morris was hired by IBM to make a film for an in-house conference of IBM employees. And IBM canceled the conference and the film was scrapped. And now, like 10 years later, IBM's celebrating their 100th anniversary. And so they rehired Morris to direct this thing. It's a 30-minute film, and it's on IBM's YouTube channel. And it's called They Were There. And it has music by Philip Glass.
Fantastic.
So
awesome.
The nominees for the 63rd Annual Academy Awards were announced today at... it says Academy Awards, and they're wrong.
And it's
Emmys. Was the Emmy Awards. Yeah. Oh, news. It was announced today at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time in a ceremony co-hosted by Fringe's Joshua Jackson and Mike and Molly's Melissa McCarthy, who I guess they figured would be available and could host it because they weren't going to get nominated for anything. Fringe and Mike and Molly.
No. Covering all their bases.
Although she actually got a surprise nomination for Best Lead Actress in a Comedy. Otherwise, as usual, the award ceremonies looked familiar. Alec Baldwin received his 11th nomination. Tina Fey, her 19th. There were nominations for Glee, Parks and Recreation, The Office, Modern Family, 30 Rock, Big Bang Theory.
Are they just nominating The Office out of momentum and inertia?
I think so.
That was like just reflexive?
Meanwhile, by the way, Community completely hosed. And I was not the only one that felt that way because, man, on Twitter, so many people, particularly in and out of the industry, going, what the hell?
Yeah.
What the hell? Community? Seriously? Because Community is hilarious and brilliant. The comedy categories held a few surprises. In the lead actor group, Louis C.K. was nominated for
Excellent.
Louis.
Good for him.
As was Matt LeBlanc for Episodes, which is actually very good. They won spots over hotly tipped favorites like Joel McHale of Community and Matthew Morrison of Glee. Matthew Morrison's co-star Lea Michele also failed to land a spot for Glee. But Glee's Chris Colfer got a supporting actor nomination. And the last one went to John Cryer of Two and a Half Men. In the drama series category, AMC's The Killing didn't make the cut. Was not nominated.
Really?
But HBO's Game of Thrones managed to overcome the Emmy's aversion to fantasy and receive a nomination. Katie Sagal did not get nominated for Sons of Anarchy. However, the lead men and supporting men matched up exactly with the basic predictions everybody had. Breaking Bad, which took home both men's acting awards last year, wasn't eligible this time around. So there's no... no awards for that.
So basically, Seamus just sort of said, it sounds like anything that isn't on a premium cable channel is pretty much crap. But it sounds like most of those shows got overlooked, too.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea that, I mean, I know that,
there are also no Boardwalk Empire actors on the sporting men's
See, that doesn't surprise me, because that show just doesn't, I mean, I love that show, but it doesn't seem to have made a huge splash with the general public. I actually talk to people a lot, and I go, Boardwalk Empire, and they go, huh? And they just sort of blink at me. I mean, and I know Bryan Cranston has won like 100 times in a row for Breaking Bad, but that doesn't mean he should quit being nominated.
Yeah.
So it does surprise me that they didn't give him yet another nomination. Mad Men, anything?
Mad Men received the most nominations of any show.
Awesome.
19 nominations.
Rick Emerson approves of this, because it was the best season so far, in my opinion.
One of the surprises was The Kennedys, a film that spiked from the History Channel because of its controversy, ended up being broadcast on Reels Channel. And it got an outstanding miniseries or movie nomination, while actors Greg Kinnear and Barry Pepper also picked up nominations.
For outstanding miniseries or movie, the nominees are Cinema Verite, Downton Abbey Masterpiece.
Ooh, that was good.
The Kennedys, Mildred Pierce, The Pillars of the Earth, and Too Big to Fail.
Jimmy Fallon was the only network TV talk show host to pick up a nomination. Jay Leno, David Letterman, Jimmy Kimmel, and Craig Ferguson were all shut out.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
The nominees for variety music or comedy series are The Colbert Report, Conan, The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, Real Time with Bill Maher, and Saturday Night Live.
Speaking about things that are just nominated reflexively at this point, it really surprises me. The thing about Jimmy Fallon is, boy, that show was really hit or miss. I mean, I remember when he first came on and
I've never seen it.
When he was first on, and I shouldn't judge shows by that because if anybody remembers the first, you know, year or two that Conan was on, it was just dreadful. But Jimmy Fallon came on and it was, and I watched it because I like him and he's a likable guy and he's a good actor. And I watched and it was just terrible. It was awful. And then every now and again, he'll just have these moments where it's just flat out brilliant. And then it just kind of goes back to being just sort of there. It's, you know what his show is? His show is sort of like, it is like a televised, it's like a televised Lucky Charms, where there's just oceans of brown stuff that just are sort of indistinct. And then occasionally there's just like a green clover of comedy. And you go, oh, that's wonderful. And then it just goes back to being nondescript. I think I think the thing about the Jimmy Fallon show is that they focus on, I think they realize to some degree that it's not really about having a good show day in and day out anymore. It's about having isolated moments that everybody will pass around on the internet the next day. And that's where they put the majority of their effort, is into getting viral one hits.
Like Betty White playing beer pong.
It's the
elevator dodgeball with John Hamm.
It's totally like the lazy Sunday syndrome of just trying to come up with something that everybody will just, sort of pass around, the next day at the office. That really is where the majority of their effort goes into at this point. All right, let's see. Well, we should just end this program now, shouldn't we? Yeah, let's. This brings to a conclusion another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. The news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology, Magic Web, Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer, Bruce Echo, Chief of Staff, Cheryl Kinnicola. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next hour at rickemersonshow.com, where you can listen to the Rick Emerson Radio Program for the low cost of just 32 cents a day, and your first week is free. We'll see you again tomorrow for another Legion of News. Thank you for listening. Good day to you. I said good day to you!